Guys, if you haven't checked up on our social media recently, what have you been doing? I'm at Nick Hardwick, and Jamie is at jamie.hardwick. That's J-A-Y-M-E with a period and then Hardwick, which is not to be confused with the other Jamie Hardwick, who I tagged a little while ago on Instagram, and she notified me that you may want to get this straight, bud. Your wife may be pissed at you. That earned me the Worst Husband of the Week award. Sorry, babe. Anyway, you guys know that Lose Like Alignment is going off. I'm sure you've seen some of the ads circulating. Hundreds of men now are losing staggering amounts of weight on a daily basis. It's been so awesome to see. And of course, I had no idea that life would turn into this for me or for us. I just had to get the information out of my head, share it with others, see if it could help people reclaim their lives. And lo and behold, it has. And I am just really grateful to be a part of this amazing team. And the most fulfilling thing for me and the program is the weekly interactions that we get through the accountability network. So sign up for that. It is awesome to get personal connections and have conversations and get to understand who people are, what their challenges are, and assist on a very personal basis, on a weekly basis. So as this was all going on, we're getting crazy amounts of requests from the ladies wondering if this program is good for them too. And for me, I said, sure, yeah, it is. But really, since the beginning, I've tried to get Jamie to give my plan a try, and she would try it for a day or two and then basically tell me it wasn't for her. And finally, listening to the request on social media and through email for a female version, and then getting some feedback back from females who were actually in the program and taking that into account, and then asking and not telling Jamie what can make this plan work for her and for other females, she went, took the parts from the men's program that she liked, modified it to accommodate the female body and your guys' individual preferences, and gave it a try. And I tread lightly saying this to her. Thankfully, she's not around right now. But it's been super cool watching her own this program. She has gained control back over the food, has reset her hunger cues, and has lost the weight she's been trying to lose, really, forever. I know. Believe me, I don't think she has anything to lose either. But still, she's getting to a place where she feels great about her body. And that is important. In fact, I just get out of the bathroom and she says, I've lost this weight, but Nick, I've lost an inch off of my waist. She's taken measurements. So we sent the adjustments back to our design team, and voila, the Lose Like a Lady program is born. We would love for you guys to join the team. If you want to know more, all food preferences and eating styles work within the framework we provide in both the men's and the women's program. We do provide body weight only workouts and daily activities known as every hour on the hour exercises, EHO. But guess what? As we tell everyone, the exercise is the least important component of the plan. It's not required to lose weight. If you don't want to exercise, or you've got your own form of exercise that you would rather do, do that. We are never going to discourage that. This program will help you figure out what works best for you. You're going to learn appropriate caloric loads for the day and per meal. You're going to learn how to match your caloric intake with daily activity levels. You're going to break free from the having to eat a meal every 3 hours cycle. It really is an incredibly empowering experience. Also, the program helps build healthy self-care habits that make the program sustainable for life. And it's wonderful when you figure out that the more you take care of yourself, the healthier, the easier it is to make good choices when it comes to food, when it comes to exercise. And the best part about the program that a lot of people find is it's 4 weeks on and 2 weeks off of the plan. That is what we call a diet break. How many programs encourage you to not do the diet? We do that so you're going to build trust with yourself. You're going to take the skills you learned and you're going to put them to test in the real world. The whole process, it's incredibly empowering. When you reclaim your health, you really do reclaim your life. Join our teams. Sign up at hardwick.life. It's like hardwick.com, but hardwick.life. And use the code podcast20 for 20% off the order. And by the way, you can use that code forever on anything site-wide forever. And we want you to know that we're here for you. You can email me directly at nick@nickhardwick.com. I do. I get back to everybody. Try it. Try me. I'll get back to you. Anything you have. Show recommendations, any questions, any support, any criticism. We're here for that. Throw everything my way. You need help modifying this program to suit your particular needs? All you got to do is ask. We've helped hundreds of people make this program work in their lives, and you can too. All right, guys, back to the show. Check it out, hardwick.life, podcast 20 for 20% off, and we hope to see you on the network soon. Love you guys. Okay, let's hit on this. Dairy, it's been demonized time and again, and I just read a recent report that dairy has been vindicated from causing inflammation and is, in fact, it has an anti-inflammatory effect. It's all crazy. What's the truth with dairy?
All right, so this is a huge topic, and I should probably open by saying I don't get paid in any way by, you know, big dairy.
Okay.
I have no vested financial interest in this topic one way or another, but dairy does get hated on these days, and I think it stems from the fact that, you know, the truth of the matter is the majority of humanity should not have dairy. And people like to follow the crowd. People like to follow the consensus. And since the majority of humanity shouldn't have dairy, people just assume that that's what we should be doing. However, that's kind of like a logical fallacy. Like, you shouldn't assign to one group the patterns of another group. It's kind of like if you ban peanuts because some people are allergic to them. You shouldn't ban dairy just because some people have problems with them.
Right.
Why else is it demonized? I think it's another talking point for, you know, this pro plant campaign that you see kind of is sweeping America. Another reason why dairy seems to be demonized is because of its saturated fat. Saturated fat has been given a hugely terrible rap for, you know, the last couple of decades. And because it's found in dairy, people like to hate on dairy as well. The logic kind of goes like, okay, saturated fat raises cholesterol, and people with cardiovascular disease have high cholesterol. Therefore, saturated fat causes cardiovascular disease and must be limited. But there's a few gaps in that logic train of thought there, which don't exactly line up.
Right.
Some other reasons why I can think dairy is demonized. Big dairy does dump a ton of money into DC. They have huge lobbyists, and there are definitely financial conflicts of interest at the legislative level. And, you know, that always raises suspicion. I hate to, you know, to hear it, you know, because of a financial conflict of interest. I'm not always opposed to it, but I can see how that might raise suspicion.
Right.
And the other thing too with dairy is, this is just a natural human tendency, but people love to point the finger at one single thing as the cause of all of their problems. It kind of makes you feel good about, you know, if you're not in a spot that you want to be at, it lets you shift blame somewhere else.
Right.
So I think all of that kind of is the groundwork for why dairy's been hated on.
And then one other that I could maybe think of is, sure. So if you're trying to lose weight, you do opposite of what you're doing when you're trying to gain weight. So as kids and as athletes, sometimes dairy is a great source of protein and a little extra easy calories to get in. So it's liquid calories. And then when you're trying to lose weight, those liquid calories can leak you into a caloric surplus, which can be a little bit detrimental.
Absolutely. I think that's kind of right on the nose. Everyone was, you know, taught to grow up. You have, at least, you know, in America, you know, drink your milk, you know, good for your bones, all this and that. Does a body good, right? Like, we all know the slogans. And so I think you're right. You know, liquid calories typically are a problem for people who are looking to lose weight. And if you know that you did that when you were growing and now you're trying to reduce your size instead of build your size, you might look to try to reduce this. So, you know, I think that's a great point.
Why should the majority of us not have dairy?
Okay. So all mammals, by definition, are able to drink, you know, their mother's milk. It comes from the mammary glands. That's why we're called mammals. And that happens at birth. And we have enzymes in our stomach that are able to digest the lactose and able to process this foodstuff for our own growth and development. And milk is a highly nutritious source of food. Babies can survive thrive on it, you know, double their sizes on just this food alone, right? They're surviving off of just their mother's milk, right? So this has pretty much everything that the body needs. It's got carbs, it's got fat, it's got proteins, it's got vitamins, it's got minerals. It's even got, you know, little things to help out with the immune system development and all sorts of interesting things in there. So milk literally has everything that a mammal needs in order to survive. However, as we get older, the baby starts moving around. It's not attached to mom anymore and it doesn't need that. And it's going to start eating what, you know, the rest of the planet has to offer. And so as you get older and as you stop drinking from mom's milk, what you instead see is that your stomach and your digestive processes aren't primed anymore to digest those things. So your enzymes that you make to digest lactose, for example, the enzyme is called lactase and it breaks down. That decreases as we age. And most people, this happens for most of humanity. This is just how it is. And this happens for a lot of animals. Now in human history, there was, a group of people, who were relying very heavily on, outside sources of milk from animals as their form of survival. And they actually evolved. They had a genetic adaptation that made it so that way they kept producing all of these digestive enzymes throughout the entire lifespan. And so they don't have to decrease their dairy consumption as they get older. And they relied on that. And they relied on milk from all sorts of animals, from cows, from goats, and, you know, and the descendants of this group of people to this day are largely of Anglo origin, usually Caucasians who descend from the northern part of Europe or can trace their lineage that ways. And so most of modern Americans, I'm not saying that all of America is made up of people from this northern Europe section, but the majority of Americans actually and Europeans, they can digest milk throughout the lifespan.
Gotcha.
But the rest of the world's population can't do that. So a lot of the people who, you know, there's conflict in America, you know, a lot of people can't digest milk here and there are a lot of people who can. So we're a little bit more split. But what you see is that actually the countries who have government legislation for dairy products tend to be all of the countries who have a predominant population who actually can digest it through the lifespan. And then the countries that can't. So if you look at, some of your Asian countries, for example, they have nothing in there about dairy because they know that their population can't process it. So they don't even deal with it. So that's kind of why is the majority of the world's population can't deal with it. But some of us have a genetic, trait, which is fortunate for us. Really at the end of the day, it just gives you an extra option. I'm not trying to push dairy. I'm just saying that it gives you one extra option that you can have in your diet.
How can I tell if I'm lactose intolerant? I know I'm not, by the way.
It's very easy, actually. All you do is just go be on an empty stomach and have a big old glass of milk and see what happens. And if you get, any kind of gash, any kind of diarrhea, severe bloating, you are probably lactose intolerant.
And does that pertain to all types of dairy? Milks, cheeses, Greek yogurt, kefir, cottage cheese, does that pertain across the board or are there some that are going to be more tolerable than others?
Absolutely. So cheeses and fermented dairy products like yogurts and kefir, those actually are very easy to be, they're very easy for the body to process. So even people who are lactose intolerant, they typically can tolerate cheeses and fermented dairy products. And that's a great point. Now, it doesn't mean you should be consuming those again, but at least on the fermented dairy side, there's a lot of data showing that that actually has a lot of very positive, beneficial health impacts, especially on metabolic, conditions and also all sorts of diseases. So I do think that fermented products and fermented dairy products, under that category of fermented products definitely has a place in if you want to include them.
And same kind of recommendation, empty stomach, try them out. If they upset you, probably take them off the list. But if not, they're probably acceptable.
Yeah, and that's the wonderful thing about nutrition too, is that was always one of my favorite things. Whenever I read the literature on this stuff, is like, I don't need, a $1 million centrifuge to test out something in the literature. Like with nutrition, I can just immediately test it out right now. So if you're curious if dairy works for you, don't eat for a little bit. Give yourself some dairy, and then within a couple hours, make some notes about how you're feeling, make some notes about any side effects you might be experiencing, and now you know, and now you don't have to do that ever again.
So as it relates to dairy, there's three different parts, right? There's the lactose, the whey, and the casein. Do people that have troubles with dairy, do they also, lactose is obviously they lack the lactase enzyme, if I heard that correctly. Does that also have them have issues with whey and with casein protein?
So we're getting into a little bit of an interesting topic here, because we're starting to shift towards talking about supplements,
Gotcha.
and
And not
there's
really intended to do that, just to parse the two out from the lactose.
right. And so those are two types of protein that are found in the milk, and largely milk is made up of casein protein. It's about 80%, if I remember correctly, and it's about 20% whey. And so this together makes up what we call the milk protein, is,
Okay.
this casein plus whey. And that's actually how the curds and the whey phrase came from. The curds are the casein. They kind of curdle up, and then the whey is,
Oh.
the soluble bit. So that's how that phrase came about.
Oh, cool.
Anyway, so yeah, there's those different parts. And what you tend to see is that there are some people who do have some issues with individual protein types, absolutely. And there are some people who actually have a more severe reaction to lactose than simply lactose intolerance. There are some people who have a true allergy to lactose, and this is a very severe clinical issue, because it literally means that the baby can't drink from mom's milk when they're born. Previously that was a death sentence. So we're very fortunate that we have, technology now to save these babies who actually have a lactose allergy. Similarly, you can experience different side effects to different portions of the proteins. That's definitely a little bit more rare, but it does happen. Where you will see this a little bit more frequently, though, is in supplemental forms of either casein or whey protein powder. And
Right.
usually the reaction is a result of what else is in the powder rather than the powder itself.
Okay. And then lastly on dairy, does where we source it matter? Does the cow differ from the goat, differ from whatever else you're getting your milk from?
So it depends.
Everything.
The
It always depends. That's
it,
true.
yeah, it always depends, right? And it's everybody's least favorite answer. So the different types of milk from different animals have a different nutrient profile. They're all largely very similar. They typically are lactose based, and they typically have some sort of protein in there, a little bit of fat in there, vitamins, minerals. It's pretty broad mix. It just depends on the ratio of what you're getting there. So it's really hard to say that one milk is better than another type of milk. Some people like to make the argument that, it's milk from a different species, so it's probably not optimized to you. And that's probably true. That's fair. But it's not so far off that you can't still derive benefit from the nutrients. One thing that I'll say is goat's milk has a very unique amino acid profile that seems to be even better at low doses. But the difference is so minuscule and so wash at a typical serving size of either a glass of milk or a glass of goat milk, for example, that you doesn't it doesn't really come into play for what you actually care about. So typically people care about, how many calories does it have? You can standardize the calories in the glass. People might care about, is it going to help me build muscle? It's going to be wash. You're not going to see any difference between, cow's milk versus goat's milk for building muscle over, say, like a 12-week program or whatever. Is there any difference in bone building? It depends on how it was treated and processed, if it has the same mineral profile. But anyway, the difference between animals is something that we've kind of hyped up a little bit more than it needs to be. But what I will say is a very real issue related to this is that there is a consensus among, you know, researchers and countries that there are certain treatments that farmers will give to animals, you know, things like growth hormones and that to try to enhance production and also enhance the growth of the animal for sales and profits.
Right.
And a lot of these processes have been banned in pretty much all of the other dairy drinking countries, but we haven't done that in America. So there is a little bit of that issue going on here. Absolutely. And there's so much more infrastructure around cows than there is around goats in America. You know, not everyone's eating goats. Most people don't like eating goats here.
I tried goat. I didn't enjoy it in Africa. So, yeah. Not my favorite.
I think it's okay. I think it's okay.
Maybe it's an acquired taste. I only tried it the one time.
But so because of that, you have this huge infrastructure, this whole system built around cows, and it's, you know, it's a business, right? They're trying to make money. So it makes sense why they'd want to pump them full of hormones and why they'd want to do all this stuff to increase sales. But it does have a downstream effect of being bad for the consumer. And so in that sense, if I had to look at the average goat and the average cow, I would say the average cow is less healthy and less healthy for us to consume when you compare it to the average goat. So for that reason, you know, goat's milk does get a little potential plus one, but as a consumer, you should probably just make sure that you're being aware you're not buying the milk from the cow that's got all the hormones pumped full of it and all that kind of stuff. And like I said, though, that's a little bit more tricky in America, where we don't have those legislations and, you know, regulations in place that other countries do have.
Anything else on dairy I should ask?
I could go over clinical stuff with dairy. Like if you mentioned inflammation at the start and I didn't really get to talk about that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, talk to me about the inflammation. So it's been touted in the media for years now as inflammatory, dairy has. Yet reports are coming out, studies are coming out now that saying it has an anti-inflammatory effect. Is there truth to the reports that I'm reading?
So the first thing that we have to take apart with this question is that it presupposes that inflammation is bad. And it's true that chronic inflammation is not good and can lead to all sorts of chronic diseases, but there are a lot of acute instances of inflammation which can actually be beneficial. So for example, when you work out, that's an acute stressor for your body. You get inflamed, but that's actually good because your body has to adapt to it. So when you have a nice peak of inflammation, that can actually be really good for your body. But when you have, you know, sustained higher levels of inflammation, that's a bad thing.
Right.
And so, you know, going back to the dairy question, if you're drinking milk or some kind of dairy, to believe that dairy causes sustained inflammation, you know, for days and days after drinking just a single glass is kind of, you know, it's not possible. It's not going to do that. However, if you're continuously drinking milk, let's say you drink milk every single day, then that would make more sense from that argument. And I'm not saying it does that. Okay. So that's the first aspect. But okay, so now if we actually look at the data and we say, does dairy cause inflammation? So, you know, the groundwork laid, does dairy cause inflammation? So first, there are some studies that point both directions. But in science, we usually go with what the consensus is.
Okay.
So we want enough researchers who independently confirm one result. And if enough of them confirm it, then we have enough arrows pointing in one direction. And so we have to go with the weight of the evidence. And when you compare, you know, the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies that have been done investigating whether or not dairy causes inflammation, what you see is that the mass majority of studies show two outcomes. One, zero effect on inflammation, and or two, an anti-inflammatory effect on inflammation. And if you compare low-fat dairy versus high-fat dairy, there's actually no difference in there. So it doesn't seem to be related to, you know, the fat. You might expect that if it was related to the fat, that there would be a small subgroup where if you parsed out the high-fat dairy group, that they would have, you know, a pro-inflammatory effect, but that's not the case. And so one other last interesting note that I'll say about inflammation is that if you compare people who are completely healthy to those who have some sort of metabolic disorder or are creeping up on having some sort of metabolic disorder, like pre-diabetes, as opposed to, you know, diabetes, what you see is that actually those with the metabolic disorders are far more likely to experience an anti-inflammatory response to dairy. So if you're, you know, otherwise healthy, you're probably going to see no change in your general inflammation levels.
Okay.
But if you're a little bit unhealthy, then dairy might actually be, you know, anti-inflammatory, which is nice. The only group who has an overwhelming, you know, pro-inflammatory response to dairy are those who are lactose intolerant or those who have a lactose allergy.
Yeah, so. And that completely makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Casey, thank you.
No problem. Anytime.